The Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. I got Finian Cunningham on today. Listeners may remember Finian was scheduled a few weeks back, and we couldn't connect because where he was, the entire system went down. There was no way for him to connect with the studio, or the studio to connect with him. It was one of those unavoidable, frustrating moments, but we made it with Finian today. Hopefully it'll last the entire program. I'm delighted to have him on. Finian is a musician, he's a writer, he's an activist, and when he's not in another part of the world where he is now, I'll let him discuss it. He is based in Northern Ireland. He does a lot of research in other areas. Months back, he spent a good deal of time in Bahrain writing about the brutal Al-Khalifa monarchy, the deep repression that has gone on for about a year now, and it really went on long before that, on and off. But the people finally couldn't take any more, and they did something about it, not violently. They've been protesting literally on a daily basis, and the response to them, not only by the Bahraini regime, but also by neighboring Saudi Arabia, is literally to brutalize them, shoot them, imprison them, torture them. Finian was there. He knows about it. I think they finally decided they didn't want him around anymore. He can talk about that as well. He's currently on the Horn of Africa, and he's researching and writing about struggles in that part of the world. It's a very turbulent world. You can throw a dot most anywhere and find troublesome things to write about. Finian, I'm delighted that we connected today. Delighted to have you on. Welcome.
Yeah, Stephen, thank you very much, and thank you very much for having me on your show and being able to converse with your listeners, Steve. So I hope I'm coming across okay with the connection tonight.
Oh, you're coming across loud and clear with
right
me.
To you, Steve.
Can you hear me okay, Finian?
Coming across okay, Steve, is it?
Oh, you're coming across fine. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you loud and clear, Steve. Yeah, it's great. Can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. You have been involved in so much, Finian, both when you're home and when you've been in Bahrain and now on the Horn of Africa. Let me let you dive in and pick whatever area you want to talk about.
Oh, well, thanks, Steve. I think it's certainly the contrasting approach or attitude policy of Washington and London and all those other European countries, towards Syria, for example, and Libya. Contrast that with Bahrain, their absolute muted indifference towards what's going on in Bahrain. To me, that's a key illustration of the hypocrisy and double standards, self-serving cynicism of the Western powers. I mean, forget about their alleged or putative concern for human rights in Libya and Syria. It's just an absolute cover, self-serving, cynical cover for their own imperialist agenda. Because when you look at Bahrain and what's going on in Bahrain, those same powers say nothing, absolutely nothing. In fact, they support that regime in Bahrain to the hilt with military weapons, politically, diplomatically. And the regime in Bahrain is committing as serious as crimes as they're alleged to be committing in Syria or Libya, but the West says absolutely nothing. So Bahrain is a very, very important litmus test for the sincerity or the genuineness of supposed concern for human rights by Washington and London. And so that's you ask me what's on the top of my mind today.
Oh, I don't hear Finian.
Hello, Steve?
Oh, go ahead, Finian.
Steve, did you get that? I was just talking there for the last minute.
Oh yes, you stopped, and I feared that we were disconnected, but I guess we're okay. Let me let you continue and explain in whatever detail you wish what you began to discuss. I think it's important because you've been in these parts of the world, Bahrain, for example, and you've seen these things firsthand. Seeing them, you understand them better than anyone, including myself, and I've written about Bahrain several times. There's another article about Bahrain I want to write, but I'm at a disadvantage because I've never been to the country, a tiny country, about 600,000 people, an island connected to Saudi Arabia by a causeway, and that's another big problem because the Saudis entered helping the Bahraini monarchy, as I said in an article, Finian, guns blazing, and between the Saudis and the Bahraini monarchy, they've been brutalizing the people. But I was never there on the ground. I didn't see it firsthand. Explain what you saw.
Yeah. Well, Steve, sorry, I hope, you know, for you, the sake of your reader, your listeners, that the signal came across okay there. I was just saying in the previous clip there, and I'll just repeat it again in case your readers, your listeners didn't get it, but there's just this absolute cynical, self-serving hypocrisy by Washington and London and the other European powers towards Syria, Libya, and then, by contrast, Bahrain. I mean, what's going on in Bahrain is an absolute disgrace. It's a violation of, you know, basic human rights, where the citizenry of Bahrain, 70% of the population is Shia, yet they have got an unelected Sunni government for the last 40 years, and the people are tired of it. They want the basic democratic representation, which they're not getting, and they're out on the street protesting for this, and they're being cut down on the streets by the regime, the Saudi-backed regime. Unarmed civilians are being shot in the street. They're being gassed in their homes with tear gas. And yet Washington and London are supporting this policy of brutal, brutal repression. And the irony is that, you know, you've got Saudi Arabia and Qatar perpetrating this repression against the Bahraini people, yet these same regimes are talking about reform and democratic progress in the likes of Syria. So Bahrain is a very clear case study of exposing the hypocrisy and the double standards of Washington and London and their client states in Saudi Arabia and Qatar. As you know, and it exposes their cynicism, their double standards, their hypocrisy, and their complete disregard for human rights fundamentally. But they use these words and they use this terminology as a cover for their own imperialist, self-serving agenda. And so Bahrain is a very, very important case study to understand the real logic and the real agenda of Washington, London, and their minions in Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Oh, indeed so. And now you've shifted venues, Finian, and you're on the Horn of Africa. I mean, there's so much going on. You've done an awful lot of writing about the Middle East, and during the program, let's get into that. I honestly don't know precisely the type of research that you're doing on the Horn, Ethiopia, Kenya. I'm really interested in hearing it. I knew that you'd be on, at least hopefully you'd be on. You are, so I'm delighted about that. And I knew that we could get into it so that you could explain to me, as well as to listeners, exactly what you're doing there.
Well, Stephen, I mean, as As with so many parts of our world, it's all about Western meddling, power play in whether it's the Middle East or in fact former Yugoslavia. You know, I was just reading your article there recently on Global Research about the supposed humanitarian intervention in Yugoslavia by NATO and the Western powers. In East Africa, I mean, Somalia is a very tragic part of the world. This country, Somalia, has been just turned upside down by mainly Western interference and meddling, and the playing off one faction against the other, and it's just an ongoing quagmire here in Somalia, and people are suffering from that. The farming is disrupted, the normal daily commerce is disrupted by this chessboard playing, power playing, and the latest development, of course, over the last few months is that Kenya and Ethiopia have invaded Somalia. And the agenda isn't very clear as to what these countries are doing, but it very much is in the context of 30 years of meddling by Western powers, in particular the United States, in subverting the politics of the country, creating chaos and conflict, and then there's lots of instability for the neighbouring countries who then have intervened recently. And so it's quite a tragic situation, Steve, and the people are suffering because of it, and it's largely down to geopolitical power playing by Washington.
Denny, and I think it always comes down to dirty Western hands intervening. Certainly, it's so true, right on the horn, Somalia. Have you gotten into Somalia at all, or do you plan to go?
I'm planning to go, Steve, in the next few months. Just trying to get a good, itinerary that's, sort of safe, and lined up. But I'm planning to go, and I'm looking forward to getting some eyewitness information on the ground there. That's on the agenda, Steve. Indeed, it is.
Well, of course, Somalia has been a violent place for so long, and there's no question that Western dirty hands are manipulating what's going on, and there's always similar interests. Of course, Somalia on the horn directly is in a strategic part of the world, the waterways through which so much oil flows, and Somalia itself has oil to be explored. I saw something, but I didn't really read it. I just glanced at it, about the U.K., I believe, wanting to develop oil in one part of the country. I don't recall if they signed an agreement with whatever is called a sitting government in Somalia. At one time, I think the sitting government sat in another country, Djibouti, I believe. I don't know whether they're back in Somalia or not, but there's violence that goes on around that country all the time. And Washington, of course, is very much involved. Certainly Britain, if they have an interest in Somalian oil. And it goes on and on endlessly. And the people, of course, innocent people, civilians, are the ones who always suffer most, Finian. We know that.
Yeah, despicably, that's always the case, Steve, I believe, I haven't got very, in-depth information on it, but you're right, Somalia is well endowed with natural resources. Water is a big resource, and in Kenya, in East Africa, there's problems with access to fresh water. Kenya and Ethiopia have got problems with that, and Somalia, just fortuitously, Somalia has got a lot of fresh water and the black gold that you just mentioned there. And I believe there's European oil companies are prying their way into Somalia. A French company, Total, is involved in Somalia. So no doubt there's a great, it's a great prize in terms of natural resources, and it's no doubt figuring in the agenda for the involvement in that country. I must say, Steve, just when it comes to mind, like for a period there at the end of around 2006-2008, that kind of at the end of that decade, Somalia actually experienced a sort of a relative stability, and it was brought by this administration called the Islamic Union of Court Unions, the ICU, the Islamic Court Union. Now, this administration brought a degree of stability to Somalia. I mean, of course, there was massive instability when the U.S. puppet Siad Barre was overthrown in 1991, and then, if you recall, the United States, invaded Somalia under the guise of restoration hope, or something like that, in 1992, following the first Gulf War, and of course that was a complete debacle, and the United States had to get out of Somalia in disgrace after the Black Hawk Down incident. But then after that, there was a period of sort of relative stability brought by the ICU, the Islamic Courts Union. But the United States and the Western powers didn't like this administration because of the Islamic connection. And re-entered Somalia with the Ethiopian army as a proxy, and destabilized Somalia again, and they installed this transitional federal government in Mogadishu, which is presently in power, but very, very tenuously. I mean, it's holding on to power very tenuously, and it is only in power because of ongoing Western support, and the African Union has got a so-called peacekeeping mission there, keeping the whole thing intact. Otherwise, it would probably implode. So the point that I'm trying to make is that, you know, the country had a chance of some stability there for a period, for a few years, under this Islamic Union of Courts or Islamic Court Union, the ICU. But because of ideological, prejudice and what have you by the Western powers towards anything that's connected with Islam, that administration was subverted and undermined, and it threw the country back into chaos. And so you've got this very unstable transitional federal government in Mogadishu trying to hold on to power desperately, and the Islamists have now, fanned out into the countryside, especially the southern region, and they're contesting the authority of the transitional federal government in Mogadishu, and it's just an ongoing unstable country and lawless country, and I will just assert that it's all again down to the Western interference. I mean, that country maybe would have had a chance if it was left alone, but Western interference for the want of oil or geopolitical kind of advantage in its in presence in Somalia, overlooking the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aden, and the Indian Ocean. All these factors that the West, covet, means that there's interference in Somalia, and means that there's an ongoing instability. And again, as you said, Steve, the ordinary people of Somalia are the victims of this, and in particular, the people, the people that are prone to, millions of people prone to famine. I mean, because of the disruption of the agricultural system. I mean, East Africa is a very fertile, in my understanding and observations, East Africa is a very fertile part of the world, but because of the disruption in the agricultural systems by military conflict and interference, the whole production system is sealed and undermined, and then this exacerbates, puts people into a situation of food insecurity and famine, and it's very, very frustrating, infuriating to see that human suffering is a result largely of politics, geopolitics, and not to do with a natural phenomenon like drought or bad harvest. It's all down to politics and geopolitics in particular, committed by these powers, the Washington and London associates, European associates rather.
It's a dismal story, very, very depressing, and so few people in America, especially Finian, know anything about it. I say it often on this program, I don't follow U.S. television, what passes for so-called news and information. There is none, but I'm sure if I did, I could view it every day, month after month, never hear a single story, not just about Somalia, but the Horn of Africa. Instead, we'd get the usual reports about the pro-Western interests, the wars that are being fought, stressing whatever is being featured or ongoing at the moment. Last year it was Libya. This year it's Syria. Also, the war drums are beating about Iran. It goes on, and people are told nothing. They have no comprehension in the world, not only what really is going on, but what I think is the most important thing. Why do these things go on? Why on earth do we want to pick on a country way across in another part of the world? Why is America interested in any of this? So, if you have a good, bad, or other type government anywhere else, and, they're not bothering us, they're not threatening to declare war on us in any way or harm us in any way, why should America worry about those things? Why don't we just mind our own business, et cetera, and so on? Well, unfortunately, we have a U.S. public that can be best described, for the most part, not all of them. There certainly are a lot of people in the country who understand things, but they're in the minority. The majority, unfortunately, Finian, can only be described as a collective or a nation of morons. They literally know nothing. You could ask them a simple question about... what do you think about what's going on in Syria? Well, they probably first have to wonder, well, they've heard Syria in the news enough, but they certainly don't understand what's going on. But think a country America hasn't ratcheted up a belligerence against yet. Well, let's just call it Country A. It's on the list for regime change, but, it's down in the queue and nothing has happened yet. So you could ask, stop anybody on the street randomly and say, well, what do you think about what's going on in Country A? They'd first have to think about where on earth is Country A, and scratch their heads and probably have to admit that they have no idea what's going on, let alone that America has targeted the country for regime change. This is the collective ignorance of the majority of people in the country, and it literally is the reason, Finian, that America gets away with murder.
Yeah. Well, thanks to your writing, Steve, and Progressive Radio, you're doing a good job at trying to make people aware. And on a more general note, I think the Occupy movement, I've been following it from afar, and I think it's a tremendously exciting development. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of moves to co-opt and to manipulate the Occupy movement. But I think essentially, it seems to me a very progressive, a positive development in that people are getting out on the streets there in the United States to protest for their civil rights, their human rights, and economic rights, and yet they're being battered over the head by, you know, by the police forces in the various states, really repressive legislation, you know, prosecuting people. And this is all very good to open eyes, the American public eyes, as to the nature of their government and the nature of their economy. And, you know, to widen that out to the world view. I mean, we have to. I mean, I think, you know, we have to realize that the capitalist system is the source of all conflict and violence in our world. I mean, and it's basically, you know, you can boil it down to a mathematics problem. I mean, you've got a tiny minority of people who want to control a huge proportion of the world's resources, and that goes with the capitalist system, and that's going to always create conflict and over resources, not only abroad but internally in the United States. And I think what we're really seeing with the Occupy movement is that, you know, and the issues in the United States crystal clearly seeing how the capitalist system is working against the majority of people for a minority. And it was always that way abroad. I mean, the United States imperialism abroad in Latin America and Asia and Africa was always about that, securing resources for a global minority. But what's really kind of coming home to roost presently in the United States is how clear that confrontation is in domestically for the people of the United States. But I think this is a good thing. But, you know, I mean, I think this is a learning curve that the people of the United States are really, embarking on. They're learning very, very rapidly just the nature of the capitalist economic system. Well, the corporatist system is not really, you know, the capitalist system. Adam Smith talked about small entrepreneurs. I mean, we're talking about a centrally planned corporate system that capitalism has evolved into. But anyway, people in the United States hopefully are learning through the truncheons over their heads, and they're being rammed into police armored cars and taken down to their jails. They're learning what's going on in the world. They're learning how the economic system of capitalism works, how it works against the ordinary person, and how it's always worked against the ordinary person around the world. But it's really becoming exposed right in the very home, the United States. So, yes, Steve, I do. It's very depressing sometimes when you look at, I don't know, I don't look at these mainstream channels myself really too much. I only look at them to kind of as a sort of a scientific experiment almost. But if you look at these mainstream channels, yes, they are disgusting and nauseating, but and there's a lot of misinformation and ignorance out there, not just in the United States but the world generally. But I do believe that through harsh experience and you know, information networks like your Progressive Radio, like Global Research, the website that I work for, various, you know, alternative media like that, and our own harsh experience of, you know, out protesting and getting your head split open by a police truncheon, I think people are beginning to, you know, become enlightened, aware of what's going on. And that's my hope anyway. That's just my hope, that people are becoming more aware and they're rising up to what the forces are. You know, we've been so misled down through the years with McCarthy, Red Scare, and, you know, war against terrorism and war against drugs and the evil Soviet Empire. I mean, all these constructs are so, you know, delusional and distracting. The fact fact is that the real enemy is, you know, the capitalist system that the American elite have perpetrated on the majority of the people in the United States and around the world. And I think the majority of people are now realizing what is the real enemy, not some kind of construct, not some boogeyman, but the real enemy is the likes of, you know, these you know, so-called, like, American household names, these companies that are relocating around the world and shafting their own workers and are being supported by American politicians who sing, you know, patriotic, you know, national anthems and whatever, and claim to be patriots. They're the enemy, and I think people are beginning to realize that, hopefully.
Oh, hopefully indeed, Finney. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come right back, and I'll throw in a few comments. I think people in Europe are more aware than people in America. I hope Americans are waking up. They seem to be the last ones to do it. The Occupy movement is also a very hopeful sign. It's an infant. And it has miles to go to grow, hopefully grow, pick up more supporters, and that's what it needs to do. It really is the mother of all struggles. I'll say a few words more about it when we come back, but let's take a quick break, and then we'll come right back, Finian.
Okay, Steve.
Welcome back. On with Finian Cunningham from the Horn of Africa, and delighted to have Finian on. Finian, the Occupy story is very much a part of a follow-up book that I'm doing to the one I wrote called How Wall Street Fleeces America. And by the way, I got in the mail today, my editor told me that an Australian publication it's been a few years now, I think, they published an article that I wrote, and I was delighted about it. If I remember, it was very, very long, and I think they did it in two parts. But it's so long. I've got the publication or publications, I think, under a growing pile that grew on top of their publications, because they did it some time back. But my editor told me that they reviewed my book. I got the copy of the publication. It's called Nexus, published in Australia, and I got it in the mail today, or it might have been sitting in my mailbox a couple of days. I get so busy with my writing, Finian, I don't check my mail more than a couple of times a week. Well, I pulled it out of my mailbox this morning, and there it was. They reviewed a number of books, and it was a very short review, very, very short. But I must say that I certainly was thrilled with what they had to say about the book. If I got a few more reviews, either as short as that or maybe with a little bit more meat on the bones, and they were as kind to me as Nexus magazine, I would be very, very happy. But my forthcoming book, I'm not certain when that'll come out. That's up to my editor and publisher. It's a follow-up to the Wall Street book, and the Occupy Wall Street movement is very much a part of it. I have not seen anything. I'm old enough to remember the last time there were eruptions like this. We had them in the 60s and 70s for Vietnam, in the 60s for the Civil Rights Movement. I'm too young to remember the great labor struggles of the 1930s. And I mean, I was alive, but 3, 5, 7-year-old boys don't really pay much attention to labor struggles. I think Pearl Harbor went by me. I was too young, and there was no television in those days.
Right?
Soon enough.
Yeah.
What's the walk on going? It caught my attention, Finian.
Huh? What year were you born, Steve?
1934. Summer of 1934.
Yeah. Gee, so you can just about remember Pearl Harbor, can you?
I don't recall Pearl Harbor Day, not at all. That was a Sunday.
Really?
And on that day, I have no idea what I was doing on that day, but the radio wasn't on, or if it was, I don't think it was on. It was a Sunday. If the radio was on, probably my mother was listening, and it was to something other than maybe a commentator. I know my dad used to like to listen to the well-known commentators of the day on radio, Gabriel Heater, Rabble Rouser, Walter Winchell, Drew Pearson, these characters that were on the radio. There was no television, and we never had a television set till around 1953 or so, and it just came into its own in the late 1940s. The first time I ever saw television, Finian, was through the screen door outside a bar, because they had a TV going with a ball game on, and I wanted to see if I could get a squint of it. Well, I got a squint, but I couldn't really see what the devil was going on. But that was my first exposure to television. As far as I'm concerned, it might as well have been my last, except the ones that invite me on, and maybe you on, Finian. Those are the wonderful ones, but they certainly aren't the CNNs and the Fox Newses of the world. Those people they never invited me on, and I'm sure they never will.
Yeah, equal to hell with them, Steve.
Finian, if I could make one more comment as well. You were talking
what
about...
You're doing for progressive radio sounds, you're on the right medium, you're on the right track, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Progressive radio just does a marvelous job.
It's amazing. I just couldn't help thinking, you know, what you were saying there about, you know, back in your youth about the radio and, you know, then the television. I mean, the global communications have just, you know, it's just, you know, like astounding the transformation in communications and over, you know, a lifetime. And for me, I just think it's a very positive, hopeful thing. I mean, of course, the communications are always, you know, subject to the powers that be, and, you know, we could be cut off any minute kind of thing. But at the same time, I think that it's the opportunity for education, communication, awareness is tremendous nowadays. I mean, you know, the powers that be can't get away with the same lies that they told 20, 30, 40 years ago, because in an instant we can nail their lie, and people are made much more aware. I mean, God forbid, but I mean, say 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they probably would have attacked Iran already because of the lies that they're always spouting, you know, and about that country in particular. But because of the internet and global communications, I mean, I think we can nail these lies very quickly, and it gives the public, they're equipped with the information, and this stands down the powers that be. I mean, I don't mean to sound too idealistic, because these powers that be can almost do whatever they want, but the public opinion and the public, you know, moral consensus is very, very important still and all. And if we can keep informing the public, they can restrain I'm really, really struggling here not to come up with an expletive to describe these people. But anyway, these powers that be, we can restrain these people and hold them off until we actually start to implement a progressive politics that truly represents the working people of the United States and the world. You know. So anyway, Steve, I enjoyed your beautiful conversation there, Steve, about, you know, Pearl Harbor and the early days of radio and television. But it just made me think, you know, just how fantastically rapid our communication systems have evolved, and in that way I think it's that's one positive thing, you know. But anyway, Steve, talk more about other things.
oh, there's so much going on. I've written so much about Syria. You've addressed it. You've addressed Iran. Syria and Iran have really been so heavily in my focus, combined with the way the media, the people I call major media scoundrels, and I have a new major media scoundrel article for tomorrow, Finian.
I love that phrase of yours, media scoundrels. I love the way you keep using it because it's so apt, you know. It's a great phrase, you know.
I've never heard anybody else use it. And, you know, I mean, people who do wretched things and harm other people, what better to call them, what more apt to call them than scoundrels? And and I consider, you know, if the major media did not support the lawless policies of rogue states like America, the countries I call the rogue NATO partners, Israel, and the rogue partners in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, there are the other Gulf states, you know, the usual characters. The usual suspects, if the major media did not go along with their agenda, if instead of cheerleading it, which is what they do, if they told us the truth, the whole truth, all of the truth, then these countries could never get away with what they're doing. They literally get away with it on the back of public ignorance and or indifference, and the major media plays a vital role in making it happen. Just imagine if you or I or Michelle or anybody who writes truthful articles, if we got a byline on the front page of the New York Times, just imagine if this interview could be on CNN or CBS or NBC, and not just once, but on a regular basis, every night, people like us, appearing on mainstream television, discussing major issues honestly, in detail enough for viewers to be able to understand it, then these rogue states could never wage imperial wars. They could never do the damage that they do. They'd never get away with it because whether we're talking about despotisms or democracies, Finian, or anything in between, the regimes need the support of the public. If the public turns against the regime is in trouble. I think even Nazi Germany understood that. They needed to marshal the public to support the Hitler regime, and they did. They did. Well, they did up until the end when things got so gruesome. And in America, you know, I mean, Congress's approval rating is down at or near its lowest ever. Obama's approval rating hovers, in the high 40s. Once in a while, it touches 50%. But it's certainly, most often, it's not a majority. But, you know, there is no massive daily public outrage. So these people keep getting away with murder, literally. If there was daily outrage like Occupy Wall Street, and it really kept growing and resonating and mushrooming, and people all over the country just made up their mind and said, we're not going to take this anymore. Look what they're doing. They're spending our money to go around the world killing people, and they're telling us that they have to lay us off, and they have to cut our wages, and have to eliminate our benefits, and they need the money to wage these wars. Well, we're not going to put up with this any longer. If this was the kind of echo resonating across the country, these people couldn't get away with it, Finian. That's what I want a program like this to get people to understand. And it's really up to us, ordinary people, to decide we're fed up and we're not going to take it anymore. Do you remember I think it was the 1979 movie, oh my goodness, I forget the darn name of the movie, but the talk show host who struck up a cry that resonated across the country, I'm tired and I'm not going to take this anymore. Something like that. And he got people leaning out of windows and yelling, I'm tired and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Well said by you there. That was great, Steve. You know, well, well said by you, man. I'm telling you, that was good. Well, Steve, the mainstream media is despicable, and in hiding the realities of what's going on. I mean, Libya, they're presented as a great cause for humanitarian intervention, and NATO, the United States and NATO just bombed the hell out of that country for 7 months, and now we are hearing about drip feeding information now about the civilian casualties from that bombing campaign, and now they want to they're trying to set up Syria for the same treatment, and the mainstream media is despicable because they're presenting these scenarios as some kind of like humanitarian cause, Libya there, now Syria, and it's just disgraceful. I mean, and the reportage from the Western mainstream media, the BBC, the New York Times, what have you, is just absolutely disgraceful, and the way it's shaping public opinion and shaping public consent to what are just out-and-out wars of aggression. And, they're just despicable. But yet, the thing is that after the event, like in Libya, then the New York Times, for example, they start to say, well, actually, there was a lot of civilian casualties with this bombing campaign. And no doubt if they do this in Syria, there will be the similar kind of, post-mortem sort of a drip feeding of information. Oh, well, actually, there was a few, a lot of, civilian casualties. It's just an absolute disgrace, the way the public mind is manipulated by these so-called bastions of free press and free media. I mean, they are just propaganda tools. They're just disgraceful propaganda tools, and it's straight out of George Orwell's kind of literature about public mind control and public propaganda, and yet they've got these fancy names about being paper of record or the bastion of free speech or whatever, and they're just a disgrace, the propaganda function of these media. But anyway, I think Stephen, like what you're doing with Progressive Radio is tremendous, and I think Global Research is one of the best alternative media. We're trying to alert people to the reality of these policies and what's behind these policies, what's motivating this intervention in Libya or now imminently in Syria, and to try and equip the public with information and facts and analysis as to what's truly motivating these so-called interventions. And I hope that we will succeed in doing that, in equipping the public with information, and thereby the public will be animated or empowered or to stand up to these this government, to these governments, and to truly assert the public's moral position on these issues.
Oh, I agree, Finian, and I must say that you're part of Global Research, and I follow it every single day. Michelle posts some of my articles. I don't dare send them all. I'm afraid I would take up too much space. But I must say very honestly that Global Research is an absolutely invaluable resource. It has a wealth of information on virtually all the major issues, domestic, international, geopolitical, whether we're talking politics, war and peace, economics. It's all there. It's all there, and marvelous people produce.
Stephen, sorry to cut in on you, but I mean, Global Research, they don't take any funding from any of these philanthropic societies. you know, the Ford Foundation, the Mellon Foundation, or whatever, you know, all these philanthropic institutions, we don't take a cent from any of these people. We don't take a cent from governments, to be sure. So the global research is totally supported by the readers, by the individuals who read us, buy our books, make, you know, small contributions. It's so, in that way, it really is truly independent. Now, there are a lot of so-called alternative, so-called progressive media, and they are funded by corporate sources, these philanthropic societies, even some government funding, and they have a veneer of alternative reporting or progressive reporting or independent reporting that's critical of the governments and the corporate establishment. But they're very much dependent on the hand that feeds them. Now, global research, and I'm going to plug this, not just to plug it, you know, because I, for some sort of like stupid, superficial, self-serving reason, but I'm plugging this because it's a very important point. Global research is actually truly independent because it's just supported by the readers, the ordinary individuals out there who are as frustrated and as infuriated as you and me about the injustices of our governments. Now, that's where our support comes from. So our correspondents at Global Research are contributors are actually independent and free to write exactly what they want. And I hope that is reflected in the coverage that we give on Syria, Libya, or whatever. And, you know, and in that way, we're distinguished from a lot of the so-called alternative media. I mean, some of the alternative media are an absolute disgrace. I mean, I'm going to mention, Steve, I hope I don't get you into trouble, but like, say, Democracy Now! By, who do you call her, Amy, whatever you call her, Democracy Now! I mean, that to me, that I've checked in on that news outlet, and it's an absolute disgrace. I mean, it's just a joke. Like they're so-called progressive and alternative, but yet they very insidiously and noxiously, justify the official pretext for why they are attacking Libya and Syria. And that, to me, is even more insidious and obnoxious than Fox TV, because with Fox TV, you at least know who you're dealing with. But with the likes of Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman, the hostess, or whatever you call her, of the Democracy Now!, I mean, they're very, very insidious because they come across with this progressive image, and they set themselves forth as a progressive media outlet criticizing the governments and whatever, but actually they are insidiously perpetuating the myths and the lies and the propaganda of the government to attack Libya and Syria by venting the falsifications and the false premises that the governments are portraying about those countries, that they're a humanitarian problem, that there's a crisis, that they need to intervene. Now that's why the likes of Democracy Now! And a lot of those alternative media are very, very insidious and noxious, because they have the mantle of being progressive, but actually they're disinforming the public in a very insidious way. So, you know, Global Research, by contrast, is actually an independent media outlet, and our coverage is independent because we don't get support from any corporate source. We just are supported by our readers. And as I say, I don't mean to kind of, I'm not trying to plug Global Research in a superficial way, but it's a very important distinction, because a lot of the media, the so-called progressive media like Democracy Now!, is actually very misleading to the public. And it's very important for the public who I think are desperate to try and find some truth and analysis about what's going on in the world, that they are aware of that some of these alternative media like Democracy Now! Are actually not very helpful. They are not helpful whatsoever. In fact, they are very, very counterproductive to the public becoming aware of what's going on.
Oh, again, very true, Finian, very, very true. And these are such crucial, crucial things going on. You know, the state of economies at home, the policies abroad that literally affect what goes on at home. Everything is interconnected. And people have no say whatsoever, absolutely no say. There was a point I wanted to make, we're just about out of time, Finian. There was a point I just wanted to make. I'll make it very briefly. When you talked about the failure of the capitalist system, I'm a product of the Wharton School. They didn't teach me the system that goes on today. I don't exactly accept the system they taught me, but over 50 years ago, they taught me something different than what goes on today. I don't know what they teach in classrooms today. I wonder whether they've softened it or hardened it. I have no idea what they do. I think in large measure, it probably depends whose classroom you end up in. You can get a hardline professor, or you can get someone more enlightened who will, in turn, enlighten students with what really is going on and teach things honestly and honorably. But I think you use the term, the kind of system we have today is really corporatism, not capitalism. Capitalism means a lot of competition, small, ideally local firms competing with each other on a level playing field. There's no level playing field. We have an oligopolistic / monopolistic system. We have the giant corporations that basically do anything they want and control the world, and the pinnacle is the power of money, namely the banks and the other big financial interests. The power of money is the supreme power. It controls everything. And they make the rules. Mm-hmm. They decide who will be the elected politicians, the other corporate giants as well. And ordinary people are shut out. And that's why we have people suffering so much, and the corporations make record profits. What kind of a system is like that? What kind of a democracy lets a system like that exist? Oh, I took more than a minute. We're just about out of time. I want to give you the last thought, Finian.
Stephen, I wish we could just talk more. That's my last thought. I wish we could just talk more. I think we're just starting to get into it. Stephen, I don't know what to say. I just think, you know, please, listeners, pay attention to Barry and find out what's going on in Britain, because it really does illustrate the hypocrisy and the double standards and the complete disingenuousness of, you know, the Washington government.
Absolutely, Finney. We are out of time. I would also say keep a sharp eye on Greece. The country is literally a living corpse, but what's happening in Greece is going to spread everywhere based on the policies that have been adopted in America, across Europe. I mean, it literally is a knife in the back of people. Finney, and I hope to have you back again soon.
Stephen, I hope so too. I mean, it was just a pleasure to talk to you.
It was an honor and a joy for me.
I'll just remind my listeners, I sign off
very quickly. Thursdays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, weekends, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.